So how are we going to do it? This is verse number 21 written on the board, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we're starting from verse 16. 20.
Akura. Samadhyaya. Samadhyaya.
Means not cruel.
Certainly.
Our.
Jakshu.
Eyes.
Indeed.
Datam.
Given.
Arase.
You are taking. Bata. Alas.
Again.
A fool.
But.
Just like.
Yena.
With which eyes?
Eka.
In one.
Deshe.
Place.
Akila.
Of all.
Sarga.
The creation.
Shastavam.
The perfection.
Tadiyam.
Your.
Adraksma.
Have seen.
Vayam.
We.
Madhudisha.
Of Lord Krishna.
Enemy of the demon Madhu.
Translation. O Providence, though you come here with the name Akrura, you are indeed cruel, for like a fool, you are taking away what you once gave us. Those eyes with which we have seen, even in one feature of Lord Madhuvich's form, the perfection of your entire creation. Purport. The gopis did not care to see anything but Krishna. Therefore, if Krishna left Vrindavan, their eyes would have no function. Thus, Krishna's departure was blinding these poor girls, and in their distress, they berated Akura, whose name means not cruel, as cruel indeed. Om Agyanatimirvandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Umlitam Jina Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Paraya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namini Namaste Sarvati Devam Gauravani Pucharani Nevashesha Sanyavari Pashatire Satarani. Sri Chaitanya Manuvishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tarati Swapatantikam. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jigatate Gopesh Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Takta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhi Vrindavaneswari Vrishabhanu Sutadevi Pranamami Hari Priye Sri Radhika Pranasamam Kaniyasim Vishakha Kishikshit Shokya Shostavam Lilamitinoch Talitanga Madhurim Unangapuvam Pramam Manjarim. Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Ivacha Patitamram Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Nama Hare Nama Hare Nama Eva Kevalam Kalona Stevana Stevana Steva Gatiranyata. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, as usual, when old Aindradas gives classes, there's usually a lot of ground to cover, and it usually takes considerable time. It is, unfortunately, it is my nature to drag on and on, and I'm not very competent to abbreviate things and you can say consolidate the ideas into such a short period. So I beg your forgiveness, and if for any reason you have other important services to attend, then I have no objection if you would prefer to leave the dissertation somewhere in the middle. But if you want to stick around and get some nectar, because there is a lot of nectar here in this section of the Bhagavatam, then you're most welcome. I don't know how long it will take. It may take up to 10 o'clock or even 11 o'clock, which sometimes happens. But if you do decide to leave for any reason, I'll understand. I won't hold it against you. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, in one compilation of his instructions called Upadeshavali, there are two instructions which are nice. The first one I would like to read just to justify my existence, you know, a little bit. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says that if I were to desist from lecturing about the absolute truth, due to being fearful that some listeners may be displeased, I would be deviating from the path of Vedic truth and accepting the path of untruth. I would become one who is inimical to the Vedas, an atheist, and would no longer possess faith in Bhagavan, the very embodiment of truth. So, this section of the Bhagavatam, which we are just now beginning to, we're going to run into the beginning of this, starting from text 19, we will read from 16 through 21, but starting 19 is one of the most luscious, you can say, nectarine exhibitions of transcendental mellows. In the matter of the intensification of the devotees, specifically the devotees of Braja, and their type of selfless absolutely pure and unalloyed devotional fervor. How Krishna acts in relationship to his devotees, to, let's say, bring out the best in every one of them. So, it is not only that these mellows are to be relished by the Nitya Parikar, or eternal family members of Krishna in the Brajalilas. But the sadhakas should know, as described in this next instruction, in verse number 9 of Upadesh Vali by Bhaktisiddhanta, the sadhaka should know that serving the Brajvasis who felt great separation from Krishna when he left Braja to reside in Mathura is our, Bhaktisiddhanta is saying, our to us. So he's mercifully including us in his, let's say, bhav. Because some people might say that, well, we can opt to serve Krishna in Vaikuntha, or we can opt to serve Krishna in Dwarka, or in Ayodhya as Ramchandra. You know. So what do you mean? It is our. But Bhaktisiddhanta, in order to impress upon his followers, of which we are included amongst his followers, so to impress upon us, he is saying our what? Serving the Brajvasis who felt great separation from Krishna when he left Braja to reside in Mathura is our supreme constitutional occupation. It is our supreme paramarthic dharma. It is the supreme occupational, the supreme constitutional occupation of us as followers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur at the feet of our beloved Guru Maharaj, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is our supreme constitutional occupation to serve the Brajvasis who felt great separation from Krishna when he left Braja to reside in Mathura. Should I say it again? I've reiterated it a few times already. But anyhow, the point being that if, as has been observed by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, if it is our supreme constitutional occupation, our constitutional dharma, our supreme religious principle, to serve the Brajvasis who felt great separation from Krishna when he left Braja, that means from the Akrura Lila on, if it's our supreme constitutional religious principle to engage in such service, then it behooves us, at least it should behoove an intelligent, progressive devotee to do his level or her level best to, as deeply as possible, understand the truths of the Bhagavat's presentation of these leelas, so that we can gradually, as we become advanced in devotional service, plowing through all of our anarthas and going from the anartha nivritti to the artha pravritti of attraction at the lotus feet of Krishna. It behooves us to very deeply study and do our level best to relish these pastimes. Because by hearing about these pastimes from authorities coming in disciplic succession, it may be possible for our hearts to become softened, for our hearts to become, let's say, sympathetic toward the plight of the devotees who have the deepest type of loving reciprocal relationship with Krishna. Because after all, in the matter of Sambandha Tattva Gyan, we are to understand that Krishna is Sadaishvarya Purna. He is the embodiment of all opulences, all beauty, knowledge, wealth, strength, fame, and renunciation or independence. And as such, because everyone desires satisfaction by associating with these opulences, everyone naturally wants to be associated with a very wealthy person or associated with a very famous person or very powerful person, because there's a kind of security experienced in that type of relationship. But as all manifestations of such opulences on the material platform are temporary and actually in certain respects or even absolutely detestable, therefore it is important for us to understand that our only real satisfaction can be had in the association of Krishna, who is the only supreme husband of every living entity. So it is necessary in our quest for the fulfillment of our true self-interest to understand the importance of approaching the principle of satisfying Krishna. By satisfying Krishna, Krishnendriya Priti Itsa, Krishnendriya Priti Itsa Dare Premana. By satisfying Krishna, the senses of Krishna, by desiring, even you can't do it. Just like Madhavendra Puri had written that my friends may call me a fool. The wealthy Mammonites may, you know, think that I've gone mad. And so many things he's saying. The philosophers may think that I'm much too proud, etc. Still, my mind won't budge an inch from the determination to serve the lotus feet of Krishna, though I be unable to do so. Though I be unable to do it. How much service can we render with this hulking, gross stool bag of a material body? So even we think that we're doing so much service, but in reality, whatever we're doing is insignificant. Whatever we're doing, although Krishna may magnify whatever little 2-cent piece of candy we have to offer to his son in his eyes on the basis of the pleasure of his representative son, the spiritual master. But in reality, compared to all the services that he's already receiving from the topmost devotees in the realm of Braja, what little services we can offer are basically paltry
pale, insignificant, hardly a spark amidst the fire. So, we should not have the pride that we are doing something wonderful services. We should always take the humble position that we're doing next to nothing. And that if we're to be elevated to the platform of entering into the association of the eternal associates of Krishna in the Bhauma Leelas, then we require their mercy for attaining the perfection of our desired abhishta, desired nija abhishta bhav, our desired bhav, the aspired to goal of life, Krishna prema. Because it is by this Krishna prema that Krishna is convinced that we are worthy of his association. On the basis of prema, will you please, nincompoop, on the basis of this prema, he considers our plight. It is on the basis of this prema, based on Sulup Siddhi, means the perfection of the realization of our eternal Staibhav in one of the five primary rasas. It is on the basis of this prema that Krishna agrees to allow the curtain of Yogamaya to be lifted, by which we may always see Krishna everywhere and in everything. Premanjana bhakti charapi, what is it? Premanjana? Charita bhakti vilochanena santak sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti. Shamasandrum achinta gunasarupam govindam adipurusham. Anyway, you know it better than me. I can never, let's say, allow myself to become too proud, because I can't even, you know, remember simple shlokas and things nicely so that I can present myself as being such a great scholar or something. So Krishna's, because Krishna's the cause of, you know, matak smritir gyanam apohanam cha, he's the cause of remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. So I can understand that he does this to me in order to keep me in the humble position, or at least to try to make me humbler. So anyhow, when Krishna will be merciful to us, then when he sees our determination to serve his lotus feet, when he sees our, let's say, attachment, because after all, these passages of the Bhagavatam that are now presently under discussion, especially beginning from Venu Geet, where the gopis are expressing their attraction to the sound of Krishna's flute, etc., remembering their pastimes with him, etc. So, to be real, these pastimes can be best appreciated when the devotee's asakti is becoming manifest. Asakti, or deep attachment to the lotus feet of Krishna, is never manifest before one chants Shudanam. It is never manifest before one chants Shudanam, or the pure name. You know there are three stages of chanting: Aparadnam, Abhasnam, and Shudanam. So from the stage of Nishta, after Anarthanivritti, when Krishna will be satisfied with the steady determination in the devotee's appeal for mercy, in the matter of his attempts to perform any sadhana, particularly nam bhajan. So when Krishna is satisfied by seeing that that nishtata bhajan of the devotee, then at that time he condescends to descend from Golok Dham to the heart of the devotee in the form of the divine name, Shudanam. And it is at that time when, by the appearance of the name within the heart and dancing on the tongue of the devotee, it is at that time only that the devotee is chanting the name which is non-different from Krishna, who is having the antaranga shaktis, sarup shaktis, ladini shaktis, kripa shakti, etc. It is at that time that one can actually taste something in the matter of chanting the holy name, because it is only Krishna, nam, nami and nam, vinatva, nama namino. They are non-different. So as Krishna is Akhila Rasamrita Sindhu Murti, as he is Raso Vaisaha, so Nam is also Raso Vaisaha. So when that Raso Vaisaha Nam, who is full of rasa, appears within the heart and dances on the tongue, then the devotee actually has something substantial to taste. Otherwise, we can say that any taste that we derive may be called as an abhas manifestation of ruchi, an abhas manifestation of, let's say, shraddha. Yet, if we hear from the pure devotees, we have chance to associate. If we have chance to associate with devotees who are chanting the pure name, because in one essay written by Srila Prabhupada, published in Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's Harmonist magazine, he is telling that, and we can refer to it later at any time, but he's telling that when the pure name will descend upon the tongue of the sinless devotee who is freed from offenses against the feet of Nam, then, and then only, is every word that comes from his mouth Shabda Brahman. Then and then only does every word have the potency to inspire or to ignite the bhakti which is dormant in the heart of every jiva. So how important it is that we who profess to be preachers of the Krishna consciousness movement, how important it is that we should see as our supreme occupational duty to serve the Vrajbasis who felt great separation when Krishna was taken by Akura from Vraja to Mathura. And in order to get this entrance into this seva of the Vrajbasis, how important it is for us to have the asakti, because the deep attachment to the lotus feet of Krishna is the basis by which we can even begin to appreciate the condition of the heart of the Brajbasis. Without having attachment to Krishna, how can we begin to identify with, sympathize with, understand even the moods of the Brajbasis in their anguish and feelings of separation from Krishna. And for that, there's every need to augment, to increase the quality of our chanting of the holy name of Krishna as our only bhajan. It is our only real bhajan. Of all the angas of devotional service, Sankirtan, the chanting of the holy name of Krishna congregationally, is the supreme, most important, most powerful of the 9 processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, etc. It is Kirtanam which is inclusive of all the angas of devotional service. It is Kirtan, and not just any Kirtan, of all varieties of Kirtan. It is Nam Kirtan, which is of paramount importance. It is Nam Kirtan, because everything is within Nam. Nam is everything. If you can know Nam, then you can know everything. Yasmin eva vigate, saravam eva vigatam bhavanti. If you know Krishna, if you know Krishna Nam, and to know Krishna truth, so bhakti. Bhakti means Shuddha Bhakti, not Bhakti Abhas. So Shuddha Bhakti begins Anya Vilasita Shunya. No other ulterior motives in our approach to the service of Krishna. If we have any ulterior motives, if we want to exploit Krishna, if we want to exploit the holy name of Krishna for any type of self-aggrandizement, if we want to exploit the Krishna consciousness movement, if we want to exploit the legacy of Srila Prabhupada to fulfill our desires for profit, adoration, and distinction, etc., then we cannot know Krishna in truth, because our approach will not be pure. It is only by pure devotion that Krishna is known in truth, that Krishna Nam is known in truth. And if you know Krishna, if you know Krishna Nam, then you know everything. If you have Krishna, if you have Krishna Nam, then you have everything. And you have nothing more to desire or to be gained. So how important it is that we should focus on this principle. Don't let the day go by without making every effort. Srila Prabhupada has told that of all the instructions that he has given to his disciples, and it could be transposed, I'm guessing, in this day of age, we could say followers, Srila Prabhupada's followers. But in certain respects, or in every respect, if we are sincerely following Srila Prabhupada's instructions, then we are all disciples of Srila Prabhupada. He is our exemplar. And we are following his example. Hare Krishna. So if we are to claim to be followers of Srila Prabhupada, then we have to understand our supreme duty to follow what he described or instructed all of his disciples as the most important seva. It is the most important instruction, and it is the most important service that we have at the feet of Srila Prabhupada and our Guru Parampara. To chant a minimum of 16 rounds daily. 16 offenseless rounds. And not offenseless rounds. Because just to be offenseless doesn't constitute Shudanam. Shudanam means to offenselessly desire to satisfy the lotus feet of Guru and Gauranga. Krishna Varna Tasha Akrishna Sango Pangastra Parshadam Jagyai Samkirtana Prayar Yajanti Hi Sumedasaha. At least I got that one right. I'm beginning to grasp the idea these days. That if we have any brain substance at all, because in Kali Yuga, everyone is Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Bhagyo Padvita. I think I got that right too. At least that part of the verse. It sticks because it's so relevant to me. So if we have any brain substance at all, Sumedasa means good brain substance. Then what is that good brain substance? We should understand a little something. What is that good brain substance? The good brain substance means to have enough intelligence to recognize that we are fallen. If we can at least recognize that we're fallen, it's just like if you have a disease, the beginning of the cure of the disease is the proper diagnosis of the disease, isn't it? So, good brain substance means to have enough intelligence to recognize that we are fallen. And if we can recognize that we're fallen, then it should behoove us to take shelter of the process that Patit Pavana, who is the purifier and deliverer of the Patit, fallen. We are the Patit. So Patit Pavana, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and as his representative, Patit Pavana, Srila Prabhupada, he has given us the process by which the Patit may be delivered from their Patit condition and elevated to the highest perfection, to the level of the gopis, as Srila Prabhupada says in some places in Krishna book, you may remember reading. So, what is that process? Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Harir Nam, Eva Kevalam. Kevalam. Just like we say, as far as I understand, Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti Sadma. Exclusive devotion. Exclusively. Eva, certainly, exclusively, only this, Harinam, three times, emphasize, the bang the nail in, you know, the brain, thick skull, Harinam, 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 Eva, Kivalam, Kalo, Nastevya, Nastevya. So, anyhow, Prabhupada is told that of all of his instructions, This is the most important instruction to be followed. Some other instructions, circumstantially, may have to be overlooked. If any other instruction, circumstantially, has to be overlooked for any reason, hopefully legitimate reason. But this instruction should not be overlooked. Chanting a minimum of 16 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and Shudana, we have to work for it. We have to try for it. If we don't try for it, if we go on with our mediocrity, satisfied with whatever little trappings we've gotten on the basis of our paltry little contribution to the Hare Krishna movement, you know, then we're the loser. We miss out. Because we cannot enter into the real appreciation of the sweetness, lusciousness, and intensity of the loving service attitude that the Brajbasis, particularly the young gopis of Braja, had for Krishna and their feelings of separation. Every follower of the Gaudiya Sampradaya must come to this position of appreciating and relishing feelings of separation from Krishna. For the sadhaka, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur recommends, instructs us that we should concentrate on the Purvarag aspect of Vipralamba, the anticipation, preliminary, let's say, attraction with the anticipation of meeting Krishna sometime, hopefully in the nearest future if possible. So, that is the real essence of the purpose of our being associated with this Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada wants to give us something very deep, very sweet, very nectaring, ambrosial nectar in the form of the relishment of pure, unalloyed devotional mellows in the context of the reception and dissemination of Krishna Katha. So we should not neglect. See, the class would be over probably normally, but I'm just starting. If you can hang in there, more power to you. And still, we're backtracking here to text 16. And still, other young woman fainted. Remember yesterday, Acharya Prabhu was discussing on, what was it? 13, 14, and 15. And in these verses, as we pointed out at the end of Acharya Prabhu's class, just to briefly reiterate, Shukadev Goswami, who is known to us by the grace of Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur as having been the pet parrot of Srimati Radharani, and thus well acquainted with the superlative nature of Radha's love, because Shukadeva Goswami is partial to Radha's group. So, in these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, he is, although in an indirect way, but nevertheless, our acharyas have sussed it out that Shukadeva Goswami is showing the distinction between other groups of gopis, namely the Vipaksha gopis, who are, you can say, rivals to Srimati Radharani's group, and the Tathastha gopis, who are neutral, and the Swapaksha gopis, Suridpaksha gopis, who are friendly, and Swapaksha gopis, who are the members of Radharani's own group. So, some of them had become extremely distressed to the point of their faces turning pale from their heavy breathing, and they were described as being the followers of Bhadra, who's in the Vipaksha category as a rival, and others whose anguish caused their dresses, bracelets, and braids to become loose. And they are described as being the followers of Shamala, who is neutral in her relationship. And then Chandravali's feelings are being expressed in verse number 15, where all of her sensory activities became, let's say, you can say inert, and they became completely oblivious to the external world in a similar way as the, let's say, yogis who become absorbed in Atmaloka, who are in the, let's say, meditation on the Supersoul, the true form of Supersoul, or as it's described, those who are impersonal meditators. But that Chandravali's mood cannot be compared to the impersonal meditation because she's not an impersonalist. So the idea that her sensory activities became, let's say, inert, and that she became, let's say, oblivious to the external world, etc. This idea doesn't actually pertain to her actual internal absorption, because she was absorbed in Krishna prema. But her kind of prema is what is called as Grita Sneha. There's a great difference between Grita Sneha and Madhu Sneha. Radha's type prema Radha's type of prema, madhusneha, is like honey, which is tasty and is always soft and sweet. Whereas the grithasneha, sneha means affection. So, grithasneha is comparable to butter, which only becomes tasteful when it is mixed with other ingredients like sugar, etc. So then it becomes tasteful. I don't know if you've ever tried to eat butter without anything, just plain butter. You should try to, you should experience that once so that you can understand this principle. The difference between eating butter, of course, sometimes Krishna eats butter, just like he would steal the butter from the elderly gopis, rafters, etc., breaking their butter pots, and he would eat some of it and feed it to the monkeys, etc. So sometimes, just for fun, he would eat butter, plain butter. But if you've ever tasted plain butter, it's a little hard to put down. I mean, it's a little hard to ingest, to swallow. I mean, it's okay, but compared to honey, you know, honey you could eat more and more and more. Butter you could hardly eat, you know, one little, you know, tongue lap of it. You know. So anyway, sometimes Krishna, he tastes butter. But it's to be understood that Chandravali's love, because her love is characterized by the sense of belonging to Krishna. Although it is not swakya, but there's the sense that I am yours. Whereas in Radharani's love, in this madhusneha, there's the sense that, because after all, Krishna is known as Madan Mohan, the enchanter, he who can bewilder even Cupid. But Radharani is known as Madan Mohan Mohini, who can bewilder even the unlimited mind of Krishna, unlimited heart of Krishna. She has the power to totally conquer over Krishna. And as such, she claims she has the power, she has the right to claim Krishna as her own. It is Radharani and also her girlfriends and also her maidservants who have the power to possess Krishna as their Purusha Bhushana. Krishna becomes like the dancing puppy dog in the hands of the transcendental woman, Srimati Radharani. So, therefore she can claim, he is mine. And she defeats him practically at every step. Chandravali, with her utmost efforts, can manage to bring Krishna under her control. We don't deny that. That is to her credit. How many of us can actually bring Krishna in our present condition? How many of us can actually bring Krishna under our control? So, we have to give credit where credit is due. Chandrabali can bring Krishna under her control. You know, by employing her every, let's say, stitch of beauty and whatever she has at her disposal, it becomes possible sometimes when there's nothing better to do to bring Krishna under her control. But Radharani, with the mere movement, a single movement of her Cupid's bow like eyebrow, can immediately devastate the heart of Krishna and make him babble like a madman and wander around aimlessly like a bewildered fool. That is Madhusneha. So, in text 16, which is the verse that we're starting with today, I'll just, if you don't mind, I'll read something from Vishwanath's commentaries regarding this verse, because there's no purport here. I'll read the text and then read Vishwanath's commentary, because his commentary sheds a little light on the subject. And still, other young women, fainted simply by remembering the words of Lord Shauri, Krishna. These words, decorated with wonderful phrases and expressed with affectionate smiles, would deeply touch the young girls' hearts. I hope I can read this because the copy machine kind of cut off a letter or two from the beginning. Anyway, I'll make an attempt. So then Vishwanath says that after discussing the verses 13 through 15, as we've just elucidated, Vishwanath says, and then the affection of the gopis headed by Radha is described by the verse beginning, what is it? Smarantyas is the beginning of this verse, number 16. So, in his commentary, he is going verse by verse. He who now, thinking himself as a descendant of Surasen, wants to go away, because he's addressed as Sauri. So, descendant of Surasen. Do you remember who is Surasen? Anyhow, I can't recall right off. But anyway, the basic point is he's saying that thus Sukadeva Goswami, as a sympathizer of this party, Radha's party, of gopis, is expressing his jealous affection for Sri Krishna. So Vishwanath is saying, it appears that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying here that Sukadeva Goswami is expressing jealous affection for Krishna in that he's using the word sauri to indicate that Krishna is suddenly thinking of himself as a descendant of anyone other than Nanda Maharaj. In other words, that he has anything to do with any other realm than the realm of Braja. In other words, as a sympathizer, as the parrot of Radharani, pet parrot of Radharani would be, as a sympathizer with Radha's party, and because he's a sympathizer, then naturally this Vama mood is most appreciated by him. Vama mood means contrariness. So he can identify with their mood. You know that there's left-wing Vama gopis, and then there are the Dakshin gopis, who are right-wing. The Vama gopis are tending to be contrary in their dealings. They play hard to get, etc. And the Dakshin gopis, right-wing gopis, or is it Dakshina? I can't remember exactly how it's spelled. But they have a tendency to be submissive in their dealings with Krishna. They have to be in order to get what they want. But because of Radharani's, you know, supreme powerful qualities, she has nothing to lose really by playing hard to get for Krishna. So that contrary mood is there in Radha's group also. And as such, Sukadeva Goswami, as an appreciator of Srimati Radharani and her loving dealings with Krishna, he's expressing a transcendental resentment and jealous affection. That how could you possibly think in these terms as being a descendant of anyone other than, you know, Nanda and Yashoda? Those statements of his, which are sent forth by his smile, which hints at loving affection, and which contain wonder-inspiring words. Remembering such statements as, and this is very nice, very, very significant. The verse beginning with, Napariyeham. You know this verse? I think it's quoted in Brihat Bhagavatamrita by, this is Kushikrata's edition, which was nicely edited by Pundarik Vidyanidhi Prabhu, and I think maybe Dina Bandhu helped also. But you know this verse very well, where this is 10th canto, 32nd chapter, verse 22, where Krishna says that I'm not able to repay my debt for your spotless service. Even within a lifetime of Brahma, your connection with me is beyond reproach. I think this translation is taken from Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. And then further, my dear gopis, our meeting is certainly free from all material contamination. I must admit that in many lives, it would be impossible for me to repay my debt to you because you have cut off the bondage of family life just to search for me. Consequently, I am unable to repay you. Therefore, please be satisfied with your own honest activities in this regard. So, it is a little noteworthy here that Vishwanath is saying that the gopis are remembering these words. It is these words, cheating words, which enchanted their hearts, bewildered them. It is these words, upon remembrance of which the gopis became totally bewildered on realizing that Krishna was actually cutting out without repaying his debt. He's saying that he can't repay his debt, and now he's actually going away without doing so. Therefore, in subsequent slokas, we will see that Krishna is addressed in sloka number 21 on the board here as Madhu Dvish, the enemy of Madhu. So Madhu Dvish can mean the enemy of the Madhu demon. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is addressed by Arjuna as Madhusudana. Madhu meaning the demon Madhu, or the demon of doubt. So, in some ways, it may be said that he's addressed as Madhusudana, O enemy of the demon of doubt. How is it that you are not repaying your debt? We doubt that you will be able to do so, or even make any effort to do so, if you will leave us in this way and go. So please, as the enemy of Madhu, you should destroy this doubt. How can we rest assured that you will come back to do this work of repaying your debt? After all, it is you who owe us. You are ours. So, how can you reassure us? How can we be so sure that you will come back? Because after all, and bear in mind, that although Yogamaya has her influence in the matter of the course of the leelas, honeybees, bumblebees coming. Jai Ho. Special. This is Madhu bees. So, after all, you may know that in the Prabhupada said, when the honeybee come, or the bumblebee comes to the darshan of the deities, that this is a very auspicious sign. So anyhow, when the you may know that at the time in the realm of Golok, when Sudama Gopa was cursed by Srimati Radharani to become as a demon within this material world, and so he became as the demon, he became born in a demon family, just like Prahlad Maharaj was born in a demon family, or Vritrasura was born in the family of demons. But in no way should it be thought that Shankarachuda was a demon, but rather he was an eternally liberated great devotee of Krishna, who had recollection even in his lifetime as Shankarachuda. He had recollection of his previous existence as Sudam Gopa. But at the time when Radharani cursed Sudama Gopa to take his birth, so to speak, as the demon Shankarachuda, for the purpose of fulfilling his desire to consort with Tulsi Gopi, because after all, he's a partial manifestation of Krishna, Sarup Shakti, manifestation of Krishna, who is non-different from Krishna. So within him, as a cowherd boy, it is described in Shastra that he had some desire to consort with Tulsi Gopi, who was cursed by Radharani to appear in this material world as Tulsi Maharani. So at that time, when Radharani cursed Sudama Gopa to become as a demon, actually, the purpose was to fulfill his desire. But he retaliated by counter-cursing Radharani that she would appear in this material world, in the Boma Leelas, and she would experience 100 years of separation from her beloved Krishna. So, in different kalpas, in the different days of Brahma, in the different manifestations of Krishna's Boma Leela, different, let's say, what do you call it? The leelas will take different shape, slightly different shape. So in this particular kalpa, in which his manifest pastimes five 5,000 years ago, in this kalpa, Radharani had to transcendentally suffer the resultant reactions to her having cursed Sudama Gopa. She had to suffer the curse of Sudama Gopa to experience the ever-increasing intensity of Vipalamba Prema. For the period of 100 years, Krishna left Vrindavan, supposedly. Actually, we know that he never left Vrindavan. Vrindavana Prityaja, what's the rest of it? What is it? Say it again. Padam ekam nagachchati. Padam ekam nagachchati means not even one footstep does he take out of Vrindavan. But because it is described by Dhyanchandra Prabhu, actually it's not his description, he's including it in his Gorgovinda Archan Smaran Padati. It is part of the Sanat Kumar Samhita of the Padma Purana. There's mention that when Krishna disappears from Vrindavan, he never actually leaves Vrindavan, but he disappears in the same way that he disappeared when he left the gopis at the beginning of the Rasalila. You know, in the chapter of Rasadance introduction, there's description of how Krishna disappeared and then how he reappeared, etc., being attracted by the gopis kirtan in Gopi Geet. So at that time, when Krishna supposedly left, he had, well, let's say, apparently disappeared from the gopis' midst, or the Brajvasis' midst, at the age of, say, 10 and a half or 11 years old, isn't it? Something like that. So then, 100 years of separation. So, you can just think that Krishna was 125 years old when he was acting as the charioteer of Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So, at the age of about 111 years old, when he was 111 years old, that means about 14 years before the battle of Kurukshetra, Shalva was killed. And after Shalva was killed, the demon Shalva, who had this iron airplane, you may have read about it in the Krishna book. So, after Shalva was killed, this is mentioned in our BBT commentaries of the 10th canto. You can read about it just to confirm my statements. After Shalva was killed, because he was killed just outside the gates of Dwarka city. So because Ugrasen Maharaj and Vasudev and other senior members of the Yadu dynasty were not present, Narada Muni took the opportunity to tell to Krishna about Dantavakra's attack on the city of Mathura. So, as it was an emergency, the superiors in the Yadu dynasty, they should have no objection to Krishna's attending to the affairs. At the same time, Narada was seeking a way to facilitate Krishna's fulfillment of his promise to return to Braja. So, when Krishna went to Mathura to defeat Dantavakra, after doing so, because there were no superiors around to disallow him, to refuse him, because that is the distinction between the prema of the devotees of the other realms and the kevala prema of the Brajbasis. The Brajbasis are prepared to do anything for the pleasure of Krishna. Even if it means suffering endlessly in his separation. Radharani's mood is that if Krishna is happy in Mathura, if he's happy amongst the sophisticated society girls of Mathura, then let him be happy. My only desire is for him to be happy. Even if it means my all-engulfing distresses, even if it means my devastation, even if it means the very cessation of my very existence, but let Krishna be happy. But the attitude of the Dwarkavasis, just like when Narada Muni went to ask for the foot dust of the various grades of devotees to cure Krishna's headache, when he came to the queens of Dwarka, mind you, they also refused to give Krishna their foot dust. Why? Because they were afraid that by transgressing the regulative principles of the Grihastha Ashram, they would be hell-bound. Not that they were afraid of the sufferings and torments of hell, but because they were afraid of losing the company of their husband. Because separation from Krishna was more than they could bear. They would rather have Krishna in his distress. Than to suffer their own distress. even knowing that Krishna was pleased or satisfied or relieved of his distress. They would prefer to have Krishna in their midst than to risk losing Krishna, even in the consideration of his pleasure. But Radharani and her gopis, they want to satisfy Krishna in every respect, so they immediately gave the foot dust. And when Narada Muni, when he saw that they were so eager and willing to give their foot dust, he was shocked, amazed, that how is it that you can do like this? Don't you know that it transgresses all Vedic rules and regulations? Don't you know that it goes beyond, it breaks the principles of Vaidhi Bhakti? But the gopis' mood of Kevala Bhakti, which is that mood of Kevala Bhakti that we're supposed to be getting at the feet of Srila Prabhupada, please, is that when it comes to the consideration of seva, we're prepared to undergo any amount of struggle, any amount, just like Srila Prabhupada, when Prabhupada went to the Western world, how much struggle, how much headache he took. But all for the pleasure of Krishna. Never mind, you know, what difficulties there may be. So when Narada asked the gopis that how you can do like this, aren't you afraid of going to hell? Aren't you afraid of losing the company of your beloved? And they replied that yes, these things are formidable, but to know that even one hair on the head of Krishna is distressed is more than we can tolerate. We cannot remain alive thinking of Krishna's distress. So we would prefer to die if we could know that Krishna would be pleased. In other words, they were prepared to put their life on the line for Krishna's service. And that is the mood that Prabhupada has always tried to impress upon us. That is Gopi Prema. The more we can try to appreciate that practically in terms of the external, because there are two aspects of a devotee's life, just like there are two aspects of Mahaprabhu's appearance. There are the internal purposes to be fulfilled in the matter of relishing his antarabhavanam. And then there's the external purpose in the matter of propagating the Sankirtan movement. Both of them are interdependent. Both of them are intersupportive. So, if we cannot understand the principle in terms of the external manifestation, which is much easier for the Prakriti Bhaktas or the externally oriented devotees to understand, because it is externally manifest. If we can't understand that principle of Kevala Bhakti, the willingness to put our life on the line for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, in terms of the external aspect of our life of preaching Krishna consciousness for the benefit of the fallen conditioned souls, then how can we begin to understand the internal aspect, the internal import in the matter of cultivating the relishment of the antarabhavanam, of a Brajbasi. So really both go hand in hand. Both are intersupportive, interrelated, and both are necessary. So, Maharaj Ugrasen and Vasudev and Devaki, they would always, when the topic arose, they would always, invariably, disallow Krishna to return to Braja. Why? You can read in the pages of Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Prabhupada has written in Chaitanya Charitamrita that anyone who wants to know about Krishna, Krishna's devotees, and pure devotional service must read Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Must, M-U-S-T, must, imperative. No question. Must. If you really want to understand the import of the Bhagavat Siddhanta. So in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, it is shown how it is that invariably the senior members of the Yadu dynasty, they knew that Krishna was always overwhelmed by the love of the Brajbasis. They had enough intelligence to recognize that the love of the Brajbasis is unsurpassable by them. And that if Krishna returned to Braja, then being attracted by their love, it was very, very doubtful that he would be at all interested to return to Mathura on account of their meager in comparison. Because their prema is not kevala prema. There is some self-interest involved. So that we have to see. What is the mood of the Brajbasis? Vishwanath ends this purport here by saying that they became completely bewildered by hearing this, by remembering these words, I cannot repay you. The previously mentioned gopis, namely Bhadra, Shamala, Chandravali, etc., they were bewildered by concentrated meditation on his form. But these gopis, headed by Radharani, became totally bewildered simply by remembering his words. Some people say seeing is believing. But how much Prabhupada always emphasized that hearing is seeing. We see by hearing. So this is another way we can recognize how Srila Prabhupada is training us in the matter of following in the footsteps of the followers of Radha. The other gopis, they were mesmerized by Krishna's form. But Radharani and her friends and maidservants were totally bewildered simply by remembering his words. By this, they are understood as more fully endowed with pure love than the others. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami wanted to point this out to the readers of the Bhagavatam for their benefit, to basically corral them into the service of Radha, into the matter of following in the footsteps of the devotees of Radha. Being that he himself, as an appreciator of Radha, you know, understood the ultimate conclusion of the Bhagavatam in the matter of course, Bhagavatam is rasmai, ragmai. It is meant to augment Raganuga Bhav, as described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his Ragbhartma Chandrika. That is the purpose of the Bhagavatam, and that is the purpose of Bhagavat Katha. So by Raganuga Bhav, it is meant that in any of the five rasas, but primarily, ultimately, as the Madhurya Ras is inclusive of anything and everything which could be enjoyed by Krishna in any of the other rasas and more. Bhagavatam specifically focuses on the paramount devotional attitude of the gopis in their loving relationship with Krishna. Bhagavatam, as is admitted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, that there is no devotion which surpasses the devotion of the Braja Gopis. And that is the conclusion. And among the Braja Gopis, there is no devotion which surpasses the devotion of the followers of Radha. And among them, really, there's no devotion which surpasses the devotion of the followers of Rupa. So it's 10 o'clock already, and we're just not even halfway through. Shall I go on any more? Because there is a little more to discuss if anyone wants to hear. Thank you for listening so far. I hope it hasn't been too disruptive. So then, where were we? The gopis were frightened at the prospect of even the briefest separation from Lord Mukunda. So now, as they remembered his graceful gait, his pastimes, his affectionate smiling glances, his heroic deeds, and his joking words, which would relieve their distress, they were beside themselves with anxiety at the thought of the great separation to come about. They gathered in groups and spoke to one another, their faces covered with tears and their minds fully absorbed in Achyuta, the infallible Lord. So we've already hinted, when they're saying the great separation that would come about, inherently, intrinsically, these Parshada gopis, Nitya Parshada gopis of Krishna, especially the followers of Radha. In the back of their mind, they remembered the curse of Sudama and Golok Dham. Although Yogamaya serves to cover this knowledge, but under circumstances, the residues became manifest. So, because of this, they became greatly apprehensive. 100 years of separation from Krishna. When Krishna killed Dantavakra, and because Ugrasen and such other devotees who are not dispossessed of self-serving motives were not present to refuse him, he took the opportunity to return to Braja. This was at the age of 111 years old. But of course, he was like a fresh youth, just like, you know, at the age of 125 on the battle of Kurukshetra. Because Krishna is Navayovanam. His body never deteriorates. He's not a fallible soldier. His relationship never deteriorates. So similarly, when Krishna reappeared amongst the Brajbasis, they all regained their life. And became as fresh as new youths themselves, at least the young gopis of Braja. And all the Brajbasis were solaced and relieved from their unthinkable feelings of separation from Krishna. And Krishna danced with the gopis for 2 months. He sported with the cowherd boys again, as they had done previously for 2 months. And then Krishna expanded into three forms. One form took all the sadhan siddha gopas and gopis to Golok Dham. Another form entered the aprakat lilas, the unmanifested pastimes with the Nitya Parikar, or the eternal associates, into the unmanifest pastimes which are presently going on in Brajabhumi today, which can only be seen by a very, very rare few souls who have conquered over material attachments. What is the shloka? Vishaya chadiya habi, shuddha habiman. Shuddha habiman. What is the rest of it? Shuddha habiman. Vishaya chadiya habi, shuddha habiman. Anyway, I'm forgetting it somehow or other. Krishna's making me humble again. So, yeah,
Vishaya chidiyash kavi shudha abhiman.
Yeah, kavi havi herovo Sri Vrindavan. So to actually gain the vision, the internal vision of, thank you, of the aprakata realm of Braja, wherein the internal pastimes are to be seen or to be realized, one has to be completely devoid, completely finished with all varieties of material sense gratification. Then there's some hope for such darshan. Otherwise, we can go on with our shnik shnik ram rams. And our, you can say, hypocritical, to some degree or another, pretentious, so-called devotional attempts. So anyhow, how does it go? Let me read the... We're on text 18, 17 and 18, huh? Oh, the third form. Yeah, okay. The third form. Thank you. I'm a little scatterbrained, so forgive me. The third form of Krishna was the Vasudeva feature of Krishna, who mounted the chariot and went back to Dwarka. So it was that, in this way, it's described that the Braja Leelas were wound up. So you can understand that the Braja Leelas were wound up before the battle of Kurukshetra, etc. The people of Braja, who were not having the eligibility, who were not adhikaris, they could not attain the realm of Golok on account of not having attained the perfection. Even in the Bhomalilas of Krishna, they had not attained the perfection of Vastu City. They did not have the realization of their Siddhadeha, Satchidananda, spiritual body. So they could not go to Golok, nor could they enter into the Aprakata Leelas. So they became stunned, amazed, shocked, that wasn't there just a Braja Leela here? What happened to Braja Leela? It just disappeared like magic. Were we just dreaming that there was a Braja Leela? So, in this way, they became Krishna became, the Braja Leelas were ended and Krishna went to Dwarka, and then the rest of the Dwarka Leela ensued, and then another Mausa Leela. Is that how you say Mausa? Mausa? Huh? Excuse me? Mausala Leela appeared. Manifest, wherein Krishna was apparently killed by the hunter who shot him in the foot with an arrow like that. And the demise of the Yadu dynasty. All of this happened later. So, Vishwanath, in his commentary, he says here that thus spending the nights in the grips of such Sanchari Bhavs as Stamba, being stunned. And then again there's Sancharit Bhav of doubt, predominantly transformed their consciousness. And here's the demon of doubt arousing in the form of this particular Sancharit Bhav. So they're asking to asking Krishna to, later they're indicating that Krishna should kill this demon of doubt. So they began to think that, what do I know? Regaining their external awareness at dawn, they with extreme eagerness came out of the village of the king of Braja, gathered in a group, all of them sharing the mood of imminent separation, and began to lament, as described in the two verses beginning Gatim, afraid of even a nimesh of separation. I'm assuming that nimesh means a very small fragment of time, of separation, and now overwhelmed with the thought of the great separation to come. See, they had an awareness of a great separation of to come. So this indicates that there was an awareness of the, let's say, impending curse upon them to be separated, for Radharani to be separated from Krishna for 100 years. They gathered together and met in various groups. Then text number 19, we'll read the translation. The gopis said, O providence. So this is where this Viraha Geet begins. Viraha means separation, and Geet, as opposed to Gita, Bhagavad Gita. So Geet and Gita. Gita means the spoken words of philosophical import, like Uddhava Gita. And Geet means a spontaneous outpouring of the heart. So just like there is Venu Geet, just like there is the Pranaya Geet, Gopi Geet, and Yugal Geet is there, where gopis are feeling, expressing their heartfelt feelings of separation from Krishna. So similarly, this Viraha Geet, at the time of Krishna's separation, the imminent great separation, 100 years of separation to come, they were bracing themselves for that experience. So, in that, they began to spontaneously, let's say, pour out their hearts to one another. So this Viraha Geet begins from text 19. The gopis said, O providence, you have no mercy. You bring embodied creatures together in friendship and love, and then senselessly separate them before they fulfill their desires. This whimsical play of yours is like a child's game. So, there's no purport here, but fortunately, they've left us some remnants to chew. I'm just going to read Vishwanath's purport. Sridhar Swami's purport is here too, but with all due respect and humble pranams to Sridhar Swami, I will only read at this point because time is running. And Vishwanath enters into some deeper aspects. So I want to go on to Vishwanath's purport. Unable to discern any other cause for separation from Krishna, just as for his association being causeless, or in other words, that it must have been by Providence's arrangement that they had the opportunity to associate with Krishna. So similarly, it must be by Providence's arrangement that they're now being separated. They, the gopis, criticize Providence in the verse beginning, Aho. The idea is, O Providence, just see this wonder that you are so unjust. What is this? That you have no mercy at all. But why have you made this judgment? Someone may ask. This they answer, the gopis answer, that bringing embodied beings together by the topmost justice, manifested by friendship, in other words, bringing into mutual conjunction their minds, life airs, intelligence, and so on. You then separate them, although they are unfulfilled, having not achieved their enjoyment. Now, one thing should be understood clearly in this connection is that although it appears that the gopis are lamenting that they have not achieved their enjoyment. Enjoyment means vilas. So, although it appears that someone may think from the material platform or from a quasi-devotional platform, they may think that the gopis are expressing the distress concerning their own lack of self-fulfillment or their own, let's say, lack of self-gratifications or self-satisfactions. But the Antaranga Bhaktas understand clearly that it is not their satisfaction which is the primary consideration, but rather because their satisfaction is based on the consideration of Krishna's satisfaction. Therefore, they are lamenting Krishna's imminent separation from them. That should be understood. That is the nature of their Kevala Bhakti. And that is the nature of Radharani's Madhu Sneha. Krishna's mind, not for my pleasure, Krishna's mind for his pleasure. Why? Because Krishna wants to have the pleasure of giving himself to someone. Who can he give himself to? So that is why the Parakya Bhav reaches its pinnacle, its summit in the Madhu Sneha of Radha and her girlfriends. We should always keep in mind that whenever we hear these expressions, we should immediately transpose them by seeing them in their proper perspective as expressions of their desire for Krishna's happiness. Then we can begin to enter into the tattva, into the, not just the tattva, but the relishment of the mellows of pure devotion. although they are unfulfilled, having not achieved their enjoyment. Here the word Eva carries the meaning of the word cha also. Eva certainly usually means certainly, but he's saying it carries the word meaning of the word cha also. In other words, and certainly. And neither is there any purpose served by this act of separation of yours. Of course, although they're saying like this, that, and neither is there any purpose served by this act of separation of yours, but inherently, they know that this, in certain respects, is Krishna's way of repaying his debt. By facilitating the intensification of their love for him. Because previously he's expressed that at the end of Gopi Geet by saying to the gopis when he reappeared before commencing the Rasa Leela, he instructed them that sometimes I appear to be lost to my devotees in spite of the fact that my devotees are always, you see, unflinchingly attached to my lotus feet. But sometimes I appear to be lost to them. I'm not so easy to achieve. I play hard to get. But you should know that my purpose is always for your benefit. My purpose is always simply to increase the love of my devotees more and more and more. So they had already received this instruction. So in effect, they're saying, although in an indirect way, they're saying, oh no, here we go again. Krishna's up to his tricks. But this time, we're going to realize what he was preparing us for in the previous incidences. He was just giving us a little taste to whet our appetite, you know, for the relishment of Vipralamba Prema. But now he's going to give us the full course. He's going to give us the feast. It's like before the feast you take some condiments, some achar or something as an appetizer like that. So in this way they're expressing their ecstasy, which is really, although apparently a painful expression, but it's really an expression of their deepest gratitude to their lover Krishna in allowing them to experience because after all, we have to remember that there are certain sadhansiddha gopis who are being trained up. So the nityasiddha gopis are, let's say, heading the charge to facilitate the sadhansiddhas. In other words, this is the nityasiddha gopis' way of, let's say, showing mercy, the highest mercy, upon the sadhansiddhas. To make them, let's say, the fittest in the matter of returning back home, back to Godhead. Because after all, the outcome of this whole affair, as we've described, when Krishna came back, he took the sadhana siddhas in their spiritual bodies to Golok Dham, which is the ultimate goal of our bhajan. Although some acharyas prefer to remain in the Bhauma Leelas because of the specialty of the relishment of certain aspects of Krishna's Leelas, which are not manifest in the Golok realm. So anyway, these are expressions of their deepest gratitude in the matter of, let's say, Krishna's augmenting their bestowal of the supreme mercy upon the emancipated jiva. Because there's relishment there also. This is the Nitya Parikara's opportunity for preaching in this material world. This is an aspect of their preaching. The Brajbasis, the gopis of Braja, they're preaching to the whole world by their exhibition of Rasa Lila, and other such pastimes. Not only for the sadhana siddha gopis in the course of the leelas directly, but also for the benefit of the sadhakas like us, who have a chance to see something that we would never otherwise be able to see. So this brings about the greatest happiness in the heart of the Brajbasis, to distribute their Braja Prema for the benefit of the fallen conditioned souls. And that is our Guru Parampara. That is our Srila Prabhupada. So, they say, neither is there any purpose served by this act of separation of yours, as they state that your act undoes all desirable results. So we can always, from the internal platform, we can always, it undoes all desirable results. But in essence, you're saying that it manifests all desirable results in the matter of, as we've previously discussed just now. Thus your act is like the activity of a child. In other words, you were quite infantile. And this can also be alternatively taken, that this is your mature manifestation of the greatest mercy upon your devotees. Because after all, who is that providence anyway, if it is not Sri Krishna himself? Sri Krishna himself has manifest his desire to do mercy upon the fallen conditioned souls in the form of Akura, who is supposed to be not cruel, but who is manifesting that mercy in an apparently most cruel way. So in this way we can understand something about the cruelty of Krishna. Krishna's cruelty is absolute. Krishna's love and Krishna's cruelty. His benevolence and his cruelty are both on the absolute platform of pure, unalloyed, unadulterated mercy upon the fallen conditioned souls and upon his eternal associates as well. So, text 20 reads, the gopis having shown us Mukunda's face, framed by dark locks and beautified by his fine cheeks, raised nose, and gentle smiles, which eradicate all misery, you are now making that face invisible. This behavior of yours is not at all good. So there's no purport here, but fortunately, again, they've left us some remnants to savor. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur Ki Jai. If Providence objects that I, who am the grandfather of everyone, cannot be compared to a child, they, the gopis, reply, you create inauspiciousness for all the worlds. Even though you are the creator, you show the face of Mukunda, which causes the removal of distress and which is beautiful with its slight smile, and then you make it invisible. What you have done is asadhu, to be condemned. Then text 21, we have read the verse in purport, but I'll read the verse again. The purport here is it hardly touches on what is given to us in the Acharya's commentaries, which I will also read. So I'm going to read the verse and then the Acharya's commentaries directly. O Providence, though you come here with the name Akrura, you are indeed cruel. For like a fool, you are taking away what you once gave us, those eyes with which we have seen, even in one feature of Lord Madhuvisa's form, the perfection of your entire creation. So, they're complaining that you're taking away our eyes. So, I'll read Sridhar Swami's commentary on this one also. Furthermore, by taking away what you have previously given, you are extremely cruel, as they state in the verse beginning, Kruras Tvam. Is that what it says? Yes. If he objects, Providence objecting, but it is Akrura who is taking him away, not me. They answer with the word Akrura Samakhyaya. Since no one else besides yourself would be capable of doing this, it must certainly be you under a different name, Akrura, you, Krura, under a different name, Akrura, who have come. If he says, Providence, if Providence says, but I am taking away Krishna, not your eyes, they answer in the negative that you are taking away those eyes with which we have seen in one location on Madhuvis, in his eyes, face and so on, the total expertise of your creation. The idea here is that, quote, you thinking that these girls, that quote, these girls have understood my whole secret, are out of your intolerance separating us from Krishna, and thus are making us blind. Now Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, but providence might object, Akrura is taking Krishna to the city, not I. To which they reply, in other words, why are you blaming me? It's Akrura who is taking your Krishna away. It is Akrura that is making you blind by making your eyesight null and void, by having nothing worth seeing in this world anymore. So, not I. To which they reply, the gopis reply, by saying that you are cruel, but you are appearing in just the opposite feature with the name Akrura. Since no one else is capable of acting thus, in other words, there's no one as deceitful as Providence. There may be many deceitful personalities in this world, but he's the king of all deceivers, this Providence, who is appearing in the form of Akrura, supposedly not cruel, Radhirai. With the name Akrura. And you are also cruel because you are taking away something you have given, which they state that, quote, you are taking away the same eyes which you gave us, end of quote. This is just as a foolish person who does not know piety and sin takes away something he has previously given. If Providence objects that I'm taking away Krishna, not your eyes, they reply that, quote, in this case, by your taking away Krishna, we are being blinded, and thus you are taking away our eyes, end of quote. With which eyes we have seen in one location on Madhuvis, in his eyes, face, and so on, the total perfection of your creation. Thus, what else will we look at? We will therefore become blind. What is the use of eyes that don't see the smiling eyes of Krishna? If they take away Krishna's eyes, then they might as well take away their eyes. I mean, he, Providence, or he and or Akrura, might as well take away the gopis' eyes. Similarly, what is actually being expressed is that just as the gopis, for the gopis, there's nothing worth seeing in this world save and except the beautiful face of Madhuvis, Krishna. Madhuvis, Krishna, in the same way, for every one of us, what is the use of our eyes? Our eyes, as described earlier in the Bhagavatam, will be like the eyes decorating the plumes of a peacock. If our eyes do not see the beauty, the supreme, unsurpassable, insurmountable beauty of the eyes of Lord Krishna. Of course, Krishna's eyes, the beauty of Krishna's eyes, captivate the whole world. But the beauty of Radharani's eyes captivate even Krishna and Krishna's eyes. We should never forget. So, anyhow, we should understand that there is no beauty which goes beyond the beauty which is higher or which is greater than the beauty of Radha and Krishna in their Yugal Milan. Radha and Krishna are the quintessence of all beauty. And it is the supreme objective, not only of these eyes, because how much can these eyes see? But the inner eye, the spiritual eye of the devotee, finds the highest satisfaction in not just seeing, not just seeing the eyes of Radha and Krishna, but seeing that the eyes of Radha and Krishna are seeing us. So, this is the goal of our life. Do not try to see Krishna, but try to act in such a way that Krishna's super excellently beautiful eyes and Radharani's super excellently beautiful eyes, that their eyes will see us, and that they will be happy when they see us with their eyes. So, with that, I would like to just mention one thing more before. I don't know how much longer I should carry on like this, because this is just my rascaldom coming out now. So, because gradually the numbers are thinning out, so I can understand that there are perhaps more important things to do with our lives than just sitting here, you know, relishing the, or whether we're relishing or not, attempting to discuss and relish the Krishna Kathas. But anyhow, we should also bear in mind that in spite of the fact that Radha and Krishna's beauty is the quintessence of all beauty, there is something more beautiful. Can you understand? And that is the beauty of Lord Gauranga. Lord Gauranga is the combined form of Radha and Krishna. Lord Krishna is Lila Purushottam. And Lord Gauranga is Vipralamba Prema Purushottam. So, when Radha and Krishna combine in that way, it is the quintessence of all quintessences. So, I have something really nice Now, if you will allow me, it's already going on 11 o'clock. It's 10:45. But I really would like to at least make some attempt to share this with you. Many of you have probably read this before, but even if you have read it, because as I mentioned earlier, Prabhupada has told that the reading of Brihat Bhagavatamrita is a must for anyone who wants to know about Krishna, Krishna's devotees, and pure unalloyed Kevala Bhakti, Braja Bhakti, ultimately. So, I thought that we should read something from Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which, because here in Bhagavatam, we're having a look at the Boma Leelas of Krishna and how Akrura Leela manifest, and the Gopi's Viraha Geet in the course of Akrura Leela, in the Boma Leelas of Krishna. But in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, there's a very nice description of the Akrura Leelas as they are manifest, or as they are enacted in the realm of Golok Dham. So we will see that there's some difference, and we will also see how it is that Krishna, as the supreme enjoyer, how he orchestrates his leelas so that even though these leelas are relished again and again, they are ever fresh with ever new, let's say, ripening of the fruit of love of Godhead in the matter of relishing the reciprocal prema between Krishna and his devotees. So, one thing we should know is that, you know, and if time permits, if we don't run into the Artik, the noon Artik, before we finish, I would like to show, because here we're discussing, as I pointed out, the Boma Leelas. Now we're going to read something about the same Leela as it is relished by Krishna and his devotees in Golok Dham. And then, if time permits, I would like to show the corresponding, because Golok Dham, in Golok Dham, there are two major peats. There's the Krishna peat and there's the Gaur peat. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Jiva Dharma, explains that those who are predominantly attached to the service of Krishna, that they will get spiritual bodies appropriate for the service or the attainment of the service of Radha and Krishna in the Krishna Peet in Golok Dham. And those sadhakas who become siddhas. But we can think in these terms, as sadhakas we can understand the goal or ascertain the goal of our life. Those who become predominantly attached to the service of Lord Gaura, they will get suitable spiritual bodies appropriate to the Gaur Leelas in the Gaurpeet of Golok Dham or Nitya Navadvip. Let it go. If someone, if there's glass shattered on the floor, maybe someone should take a broom. I think he's attending to it. You're getting the broom? So, anyhow, and furthermore, those devotees who are equally disposed to the services of both Radha Krishna and Lord Gauranga, they will get two spiritual bodies simultaneously. A body, spiritual body of a gopi or according to one's bhav, in the Krishna Peet to serve Radha and Krishna, and also at the same time an avesh manifestation by you could say sarup vyuha, the manifestation of one's intrinsic spiritual form as a Nadia Kishora. So in the realm of Nitya Navadvip, in the Gaurpeet of Golok Dham, so you can get simultaneously a Gopi Sarup and at the same time a Kishore Brahman Sarup in the Gaurpeet for relishment of what the Gaurpeet has to offer in the matter of fulfillment of the impossibilities that could not be experienced or could not be had or fulfilled in the Krishna Peet of Golok Dham. So all these things are there. So it's interesting to see how the Akrura Leela manifest in the Gaur Leela as well. Whether we have time to get into that or not, but I thought that at least I should mention the idea in case we don't get to it. Because this this section of Brihat Bhagavatamrita is very, very it's a little long, so don't mind. If you don't mind hearing my struggle to read through it, but I hope you can get something nice from it. One day, as Krishna was living in the town of Nandishwar, Akrura came to bring him from Braja to Mathura city on Kamsa's order. When they heard this news, even the people in other places and even the stones, wood, and other inanimate objects cried and broke into pieces. At night, hearing this news, all the people of Gokul lamented, crying and fainting again and again. So at this point, one could ask that what is everybody crying about? Because don't they realize that Krishna's cruelty is doing them the topmost good? But what is the meaning of that topmost good if it doesn't augment their feelings of separation? If it doesn't augment their anguish of love? If it doesn't augment their crying incessant tears and tears and tears in their anxiety for Krishna's loving services? So therefore, it behooves us to understand that the mercy is upon us if we are in fact augmenting our crying and crying and crying out of deepened or deepening attachment to the lotus feet of Krishna. And that our deepening attachment for the lotus feet of Krishna will facilitate our appreciation for these leelas as we hear them. As we hear these leelas, it should act on our heart to deepen our attachment for Krishna. And as our attachment for Krishna deepens in the course of our attempts to chant the pure name, then we will see these leelas again and again with every time that we read these leelas or hear these leelas. We will see with new light and new light due to the intensification of our own attachment. We can begin to see how it is that Krishna's enactment and reenactment of these same leelas again and again and again, both in this material world and in Golok Dham itself, serve to ever increasingly intensify the devotee's loving sentiments of attachment for the pleasures of Krishna. At night, hearing this news, all the people of Gokul lamented, crying and fainting again and again. Yasoda, terrified by the demon Kamsa and thinking her son, her very life, with many loud complaints, hid Krishna in a secluded place. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains in his commentary here that she hid Krishna behind a curtain and other obstacles to keep Akura and also Nanda Maharaj and others who were cooperating with Akura from finding him, so that Krishna could not be taken from her midst. In the morning, Akura, with many arguments, convinced Nanda. Then Nanda convinced his crying wife and brought his son outside. Jai ho Shri Shri Nitai Gaur Radhe Shyam Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. Goswami explains that Akura's arguments included a description of Kamsa's wickedness and Krishna's supreme strength. In other words, he was convincing Nanda Maharaj that Krishna would have no problem in dealing with the wicked King Kamsa, so that Nanda Maharaj would not be having any apprehension in the matter of the protection of his Lala, little boy. It was as if Nanda had broken the lives of the gopis as they loudly called out, "Alas, alas," shamelessly cried and gazed on Krishna. Then poor Yasoda came outside, wiping away the streams of her tears. She took her son's hand and, as if making a gesture, placed it in the hand, Krishna's hand, in the hand of Akura. She said to Nanda, trust no one but you. He who is more dear than life, I place in your hand. Keep him by your side. Return him here and place him again in my hand. When the pious lady, overcome with love for her son, fainting again and again, went without Krishna to her home, a great cry rose among the women of Braja. When this is remembered, even today, the rocks cry out, the dry wood sheds tears, thunderbolts break into pieces, and if it has not already given up its life, the world is at once plunged in an ocean of sorrow. Again and again, comforted by honest, simple Yasoda, the women of Braja, their hearts drowning in an ocean of pain and grief, angrily said to her. Sanatana Goswami explains here that Mother Yasoda said to them, I placed Krishna in the hands of Nanda and the hand of Akura, who is the son of a great sage. Krishna will be returned because he was placed in the hands of good people. There is no need to fear. They will quickly return him to me. Mother Yasoda was simple and honest, and therefore she had faith in the words of crooked Akura. The gopis replied, O merciless one, O merciless one, merciless, O fool. You can imagine the young gopis are calling Mother Yasoda a fool. They're so brazen. How, after placing your own son in the paws of a tiger, can you alone enter your empty home, which should now be set in flames? Pushed by grief, rebuking her and others, cursing Akura, calling out to the Lord, and crying pitifully, they ran from their homes. Sanatana Goswami explains that others in this verse here means Nanda and the gopis, rebuking Mother Yasoda, others and others means rebuking also Nanda Maharaj and the gopas. Because remember, the gopas are also mounting the chariots to follow Akura with all the milk products and etc. With these cries of intense grief, they made Akura, Nanda, the gopa boys accompanying them, and their beloved Krishna standing on the chariot cry, and they made all the people of Braja faint. Composing himself, Krishna, and seeing that the gopis had become as if dead, he who is the gopis' goal brought them again to life, descended from the chariot, and unseen by anyone, went with them into the forest to perform
Leelas. Perhaps Rasa Leela.
So Krishna, seeing them, after all the Brajvasis, the gopis had caused, what does it say? Akura, Nanda, and the gopas accompanying them, and also their beloved Krishna standing on the chariot, the gopis had caused them to cry. So their eyes were filled with tears, so they couldn't see properly. So Krishna, understanding this and wiping his tears from his eyes, took the opportunity to sneak away, to jump off the chariot while no one could see things properly. And he disappeared into the kunjas with the gopis. Composing himself, Kamsa's messenger, Akura, not seeing Krishna on the chariot and feeling morose, convinced Balaram with many eloquent words. He described how only for Krishna's sake, Devaki, Vasudev, and all the Yadavas, had suffered. Then Balaram, who is the son of Vasudev and Rohini, with his uncle Akura, searched for his younger brother Krishna. By following certain signs, he came to the right forest grove. So Sanatan Goswami explains that the signs were Krishna's footprints. So they were following Krishna's footprints, which were marked with the various auspicious markings, so they could find out where Krishna had gone, to which forest grove. When Balaram could see Krishna and the gopis from far away, Akura called out so Krishna could hear his words. Sriman Akura said, "Wicked Kamsa insults your poor aged parents again and again. Again and again, he raises his sword to kill them. They are plunged in fears, lamentation, and pain. They are your devotees. It is not right to ignore them." Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that Vasudeva and Devaki, Krishna's parents, are afraid of Kamsa. They lament because they cannot see their son, and they suffer because they hear from Kamsa many lies about their son. All the Yadavas placed their eyes on my path. This is Akura still speaking, trying to convince Krishna to come out. In other words, placing their eyes on their path means that the Yadavas know of Akura's journey and mission, and they're anxiously awaiting its outcome. They have no other shelter. So it is mentioned here that all the Yadavas placed their eyes on my path, Akura is saying. They suffer greatly. They have no other shelter. They're overcome with grief. Let not their hopes be destroyed. Let not the demigods, Brahmins, and others continue to fear Kamsa. Again and again, he praises the strength of his arms, Kamsa. He does not think the demigods have any power at all to crush him. He is always worshipped by demon kings, powerful as he. Sri Sarup, because this is Gopakumara, who has already gone to the spiritual world and has become the cowherd boy named Sarup. He has already entered Golok Dham after his long sojourn through the various spheres. And he has returned at the request of Srimati Radharani to deliver one Mathura Brahman. So he's telling about these Golok Leelas to this Mathura Brahman. So Sri Swarup said, placing blades of grass in his teeth, he spoke many sweet words. He who is named Akura and whose actions are very terrible bowed down before the women of Braja one by one in order to perpetrate his heinous atrocities to the people of Braja. Sriman Akura said, "Don't kill they who were born in the Yadu family. Be kind to them, for they are filled with grief. O goddesses, Krishna's poor parents who are imprisoned by Kamsa should be rescued." The gopis say in reply, "O liar, O thief, follower of Kamsa, where are the parents of he who is the son of Nanda and Yasoda? Don't kill Gokul village. Don't crush innocent women." Sri Saruk said, "Hearing of wicked Kamsa's deeds and of how he himself was the cause of his relatives' suffering, and seeing that Balaram agreed, Krishna comforted the gopis and, filled with rage and grief, left that forest grove." It's an amazing thing here. I was trying to find it. I don't know what I did with it. Must be somewhere here. That the people of Braja are not enchanted by Krishna, but rather it was Lord Krishna who was enchanted by them, by the Brajvasis. That is the truth. Narada Muni is speaking in this verse, telling to Gopakumar earlier, before he reached Golok Dham. So Narada Muni is saying here that it is Krishna who is enchanted by the Brajvasis. It's not so much that the Brajvasis are enchanted by Krishna, but it is Krishna who is enchanted by the Brajvasis. So much so that in the course of his Braja Leelas, he forgets about his mission as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chajis dharma samstarpanathaya. He forgets that it is his mission to kill Kamsa and all the, kings which are overburdening the earth, etc. The demoniac kings, etc. So in the course of the Braja Leelas, he forgets all these things. He totally forgets his mission. So you may remember that earlier, in I think the last chapter, or perhaps chapter 37, Narada is appearing before Krishna and reminding Krishna, just after he had killed Keshi Demon and Vyomasura. So then Narada Muni appears before Krishna, and he reminds Krishna about his mission by telling him that in the future, in just 2 days, I will see that you are going to Mathura, and this is even before Akura comes, So he's reminding Krishna that you will kill Kamsa, and that you will kill Shalva, and that you will kill all these demoniac kings, and that you will fight with that you will act as the charioteer of Arjuna, you know, for the matter of diminishing the burden of the world and all these things. So Narada Muni is reminding Krishna of his mission, because Krishna had completely forgotten his mission. So similarly, we see here that by Akura's words, although Krishna was overwhelmed by the loving dealings of the Braja Gopis, and which caused him to jump down from the chariot and sneak away into the forest just to have one last rendezvous, you know, with the gopis. So but the words of Akura, they ignited rage and grief within the heart of Krishna concerning the condition of the Yadavas and the condition of his so-called real parents. Actually, we should understand internally it is understood, because after all, we should keep in mind that according to our acharyas, the killing of the demons, even in the realm of Braja, is done by the Vasudeva aspect of Krishna. And it is the Vasudeva aspect that was actually taken by Akura out of Braja. Because in the Braja Leelas, the Vasudeva aspect and the Mahavishnu aspect, Shirdakshay Vishnu aspect, they were all merged into the one form of Krishna. In the course of his Leelas, the different aspects would do their job, so to speak, or carry out their various functions. So we should understand that it was the Brajendra Nandan Krishna that jumped off the chariot to rendezvous with the gopis. And it is the Vasudeva Krishna in whose heart Akura has ignited this rage and grief. And it is the Vasudeva Krishna who has left the forest grove and mounted the chariot and left with Akura. The Brajendra Nandan Krishna simply disappeared behind the bushes to watch the fun. So Akura was pleased. Encouraged by Balaram, he ran to bring the chariot, because they were chasing out the footsteps, you know, to find the grove in which Krishna and the gopis had disappeared. So now he had to run back and get the chariot quickly to come and fetch Krishna. Understanding that Krishna would now go to Mathura, again and again gazing at his lotus face, frightened of the fire of separation from him, crying and falling at his feet, the gopis said to Krishna, "O Lord, we cannot live without you. We have no shelter but you. Lord, don't abandon your maidservants. Please don't go. For your sake, we made the forest our home, and our homes a forest. We made enemies friends, and friends enemies. We made poison nectar, and nectar poison. Without you, we will die. Not seeing your handsome smiling face, your charming lotus feet, and your chest worshipped by all splendors, we will slowly die. When desiring to enjoy Gopa pastimes, you go to the forest of Vrindavan with your friends, only by hoping that certainly you will return in the evening, can we somehow painfully pass the day. When following Kamsa's order, and in the company of Kamsa's dear friend, you have, that means Akura, you have gone far away to that city. How filled with many fears and worrying that you will suffer in a faraway place will we live? We don't know how hard it will be to kill Kamsa and his followers, or how long it will take to kill the sufferings of the people there, or whether you will remember us there. When the gopis spoke these plaintive words, everyone there wept and fainted. Somehow, regaining his composure and wiping the tears from his and the gopis' eyes, the Lord spoke the following words in a voice choked with emotion. The Lord said, I will very easily pacify this impotent Kamsa who hates me and my devotees. Have faith that I will return soon. O friends, do not cry and make things inauspicious. Just see his cheating words. Make them inauspicious. So Krishna says that I will pacify this impotent Kamsa, it means he'll kill him, obviously. Lay him to waste. Sri Saruk said, then Nanda, the gopis, the gopas, Nanda, the gopas, Rohini, Sri Yasoda, the others, and the animals, all came there quickly. They came to the forest grove. They somehow, by intuition, found them out. Sanatana Goswami here explains that the others includes the Brahmin priest, the servants, the maidservants, and many others. The animals included the cows, buffaloes, and many other animals. With a great effort, turning his glance from the gopis, Lord Hari, with his elder brother, climbed the chariot Akura had quickly brought. Seeing the gopis crying, fainting, falling to the ground, and turning the dust to mud with their tears, Yasoda cried pitifully. Even though he was also unhappy at heart, Nanda, showing his eloquence, spoke words to comfort her. Sri Nanda said, don't think I go happily to that city, or that I believe Krishna is someone else's son, or that I will leave Krishna there and somehow return to Braja without him, or that I will be eager to stay long in that city. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that Nanda asserts here that Akura's claim that Krishna is Vasudeva's son is a lie. Do I not know that without your son, this is Nanda Maharaj speaking, we people of Braja cannot live for a moment? Know that as soon as Vasudeva and Devaki are released, I will return with your son. This Leela has some fantastic twist to it. You know, let's say, in contrast to the Boma Leela. So it's really good. Where are we? Sri Sarup said, confronted by him again and again with many promises and now peaceful at heart, Yasoda comforted the gopis with many words. Carefully pacifying them in many ways, she picked them up. The gopas climbed on their carts. Akura made the chariot go. Seeing Krishna leaving, unable to bear his separation, their dried up mouths crying, "Alas, alas," their steps faltering, and their pitiful wailing filling all directions, the woman of Braja ran after the chariot. Some grabbed the chariot, some threw themselves under the wheels, some fainted, some could not move. Then cows, bulls, calves, deer, and other animals, crying, and their faces washed with tears, surrounded the chariot. Making a great sound, the birds flew in a circle above them. The leaves of the plants suddenly withered. The trees and rocks fell from the great mountains. The lotuses withered, and the rivers, now very thin, flowed backwards upstream. Seeing the condition of his most beloved gopis, Krishna became filled with pain and grief. Unable to stop their crying, he himself became washed in tears. Fearing that Krishna might again jump from the chariot or faint unconscious and fall from it, Akura, the elder of the Vrishnis, affectionately held him from behind. Such is his Vatsalya Bhav. Incidentally, the man who's the proprietor of the Ram Sham Mitaiwala across the street, he told me one day of his being a descendant in the family from Akura in Braja. He's a Brajvasi, so you know there are such descendants from different gotras. So he's a descendant from the family of Akura. So I told him, "We'll see if I buy your sweets anymore." So anyhow, Akura is holding Krishna from behind. Noticing that Krishna had fainted, Akura, with the permission of Balaram, Nanda, and the others, with his whip, made the chariot's horses go very quickly. Here and there, the gopis would throw themselves before the horses, but Akura would always make the chariot swerve and not hit them. As the crying gopis looked on, Akura stole the Lord from them as an eagle steals a piece of meat from karari birds. Akura drove the horses so fast that soon No one could even see the chariot. Each climbing on his own cart yoked with great bulls, Nanda and all the gopas quickly followed the chariot. Bringing him to Brahma Lake and speaking many eloquent words of prayer, Akura woke Krishna and brought him to his original consciousness. Brahma Lake is also known as Akura Tirtha or Akura Ghat. It is very difficult to hear what happened to the people of Braja. Alas, alas, talk of it breaks thunderbolts and other hard things to pieces. Sri Parikshit said, because after all, this is a story which is being told by Maharaj Janmanjai, I think, isn't it? He's telling Parikshit Maharaj's talking to his mother Uttara. This was before his demise, obviously. Because Mother Uttara wanted to hear something about the conclusions of the Bhagavat that Parikshit Maharaj had heard from Shukadeva Goswami. So, in conclusion, this Brihat Bhagavatamrita has come out. At least it should be seen like that. Some people may argue the actual validity of this this actual from the historical standpoint, but as it is the composition of such an acharya like Sanatana Goswami, it has its own Gaur Haribo, it has its own let's say validation, so to speak, in of itself. So anyhow, Sri Parikshit said, "O mother, speaking these words in a pitiful voice, crying in pain and overcome with love, Swarup fainted. With many great efforts, the agitated and crying Mathura Brahman that Swarup had come from Golok to deliver on Radharani's order brought him back to consciousness in a moment, and again he, Swarup, spoke. Swarup said, then Krishna went to Mathura, delighted the people there, killed Kamsa and Kamsa's followers, and released his parents. He crowned Kamsa's father Ugrasen, ruler of the kingdom, brought the Yadavas there from all directions, and comforted the people of the city. To please the Yadavas, for whom he was the only goal of life, and who were very unhappy, frightened by the kings that had been Kamsa's friends, Krishna, who is affectionate to his devotees, stayed there with his elder brother. Then Krishna sent Nanda and the other gopas back to Gokul to comfort the people there. Krishna said, father, with the gopas, please go to Gokul at once, so the people there do not die in my absence. I will stay here briefly to please my friends, so unhappy at heart, and then I will quickly return to Braja. Sri Nanda said, I will never believe that you are someone else's son, and you will go to live somewhere else. When you say, I will return, I believe you. Save us, save us. Don't leave us, don't leave us. Go where you like, we will go with you. In other words, forget it, I'm not going back to Russia without you. Because of my promise, your mother and the people of Braja are still alive. Oh dear one, if I am hard-hearted and return without you, they will die in a moment. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that Nanda had promised the people of Braja that he would not return without Krishna. Sridham said, Sridham Gopa, it appears that Sridham is appearing here. O Lord, how can we, because Nanda has said like this and now Sridham is saying, O Lord, how can we who could barely stay alive when you hid for a moment behind a tree, a vine or something else in your pastimes of herding the cows in the land of Braja, survive if you stay for a long time in a faraway place? Sri Sarup said, when the Lord, hearing their unhappiness, became silent, Vasudev, fearing the Lord would want to go to Braja, spoke. Here's Vasudeva's mood coming out again. Sri Vasudeva said, Brother Nanda, your son will be perfectly happy staying in Braja with his elder brother. He will not be happy anywhere else. However, this is the time for them to accept the sacred thread. Let them become brahmacharis, go to another place and study. Afterwards, they will return to Braja. Seeing Krishna smile at Vasudev's words, Nanda, filled with tears and not smiling, left. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that with this smile, Krishna hinted that he wanted to do as Vasudev said. Nanda understood the hint and convinced that Krishna would certainly return to Braja to be with them, left for Braja. Accompanied by the Yadavas, the Lord followed the king of the Gopas. As the weeping Gopas, one by one, held his neck, the Lord wept loudly. Seeing that Krishna was unhappy and wanted to go, Vasudev and the other intelligent Yadavas turned him back. Seeing that Krishna was unhappy and wanted to go, in other words, Krishna changed his mind, you know, upon seeing their pitiable condition. He wanted to go back to Braja. Vasudev and other intelligent Yadavas turned him back with many logical arguments. By Krishna's desire, Nanda and all the other gopis went to Braja. Hearing that Nanda had come, the people of Braja, this is incredible. The people of Braja happily came to meet him. Out of grief and embarrassment, covering his face with a cloth, very morose and crying, Nanda went to his home and laid down on the ground. Not seeing the Lord, the people of Braja became filled with pain, filled with many fears. They did not know what to do. Their mouths dried and withered. They could not even ask about him. Then, from an elderly gopa, they heard the news of the Lord. Alas, 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 Krishna's mother and the other woman cried in agony. Alas, 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 alas. How can I describe what they felt? Sri Parikshit said, O mother, his heart burned by these activities. Sarup, the best of the cowherd boys, again fainted. The great Mathura Brahman carefully brought Sarup to consciousness again. Fearing he would faint again, Sarup did not say anything more about this topic. Seeing that the Mathura Brahman was very eager to hear the rest of the story, the great soul Sarup carefully pacifying his heart, spoke as follows. Sri Sarup said, deciding that there was no other way to remove their grief, Krishna, who is conquered by his devotee's love, quickly returned to Braja. So this happens in the Golok Lila. Here he is, he's putting them into abject distress by sending Nanda Maharaj back to Braja without him. But then, in this Lila, you will read in the first section of Priyat Bhagavatamrita, you will see how it is that Krishna gives his reasons for not returning to Braja in the Boma Lilas. How it is that if he returns to Braja, then right now as it is, in my absence, they're sustaining their lives with the hope of my return. But if I return, they will become obsessed with an anxiety of the chances of my again departing, and that will devastate them. It will put them into even a greater trauma. So therefore, he's purposely not returning to Braja in the first part. But here, Krishna decides that there's no other way than to remove their grief. So he quickly returned to Braja. Sanatana Goswami explains that Krishna made this decision after hearing the words of Uddhava. In other words, Uddhava came to give the message to the gopis and then returned to describe the pitiable condition of the Braja gopis, particularly in their, topmost relishment of the Mahabhav in their Vipralamba pravas. So, to pacify them, after hearing of their condition, Krishna makes this decision to quickly return to Braja. Merciful Krishna, who is the crest jewel of the wise, restored the lives of the people of Braja. He enjoyed pastimes with them, and they forgot all their sufferings and the roots from which their sufferings grew, namely his disappearance from Braja. If someone sometimes would remember or speak of the Lord's absence from Braja, the person would think, quote, I was frightened and lamented greatly because I saw a very bad dream. Their senses attracted and charmed by the sweetness of Gopal's pastimes. After a time, the people of Braja could not remember the Lord's leaving them. O friend, after some time, as if he had never come before, Akura came again and took his chariot to Braja. Again, he took away the life of Braja. The people there attained the same condition as before. Again, Krishna went to Mathura city, killed Kansa, and returned to Braja as before. In this way, he, the supreme enjoyer, enjoyed his pastimes. Again and again, he goes to Mathura city, and as before, again and again, he returns and enjoys his pastimes in Braja. Again and again, he subdues Kaliya. Again and again, he lifts Govardhan Hill. Again and again, the Lord enjoys many wonderful pastimes that enchant the devotees' hearts. Poisoned by great love for Sri Krishna, the people of Braja think these events never happened before. This is Yogamaya's influence. Separated from him and meeting him again, their love for Krishna grows very, very great. For the eternal residents of Braja, the news of these pastimes is very far away. Even newcomers like myself cannot remember them. Sanatana Goswami explains that by the Lord's mercy, the eternal residents of Braja forget all these pastimes so that they can experience them as if they were new, again and again. How can they who are always plunged in a great ocean filled by streams of the Lord's charming sweetness and are maddened by attaining the great treasure of pure love for him, not forget? Plunged in an ocean of love for his dear devotees. Even the Lord himself, the crown of the wise, has no power to understand his own opulences. What he has done, he doesn't understand his own opulences, nor what he has done, and what he will do in the future. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that even Lord Krishna forgets that these pastimes have happened again and again. These pastimes, where the Lord's lotus feet are served by his personal associates, are eternal, spiritual, and full of knowledge and bliss. Srila Sanatana Goswami explains that the Lord's pastimes, we only have 10 minutes, appear like those of an ordinary human being. This is described by the elderly gopis in the following words of Srimad Bhagavatam. Quote, sometimes being angry, Krishna passes urine and stool in a neat, clean place in our houses. The Vishnu Purana also explains, quote, by his own wish, the Lord of the universes enjoys pastimes like those of a human being. Text 363. O Brahman, thus I have described to you the extraordinary and extremely exalted flood of the sweetness that is Goloka's glory. The Mathura Brahman said, when Krishna went to Mathura city, where did you stay? How attaining his feet after a long time and with great endeavor, could you wish to go somewhere else? By the Lord's order, everyone like me stays in Braja with Nanda and the others who are like him. Sanatana Goswami explains that Nanda and the others have the same nature as the Lord himself. It is the nature of Golok that they who live there never wish to leave it, even if they cannot have Krishna's company there. Torment felt there dances again and again on the heads of all happiness. Grief felt there is better than the greatest of all bliss. Staying there always, attaining an eternal result beyond what I could desire, and my heart always being fulfilled, I never become satiated. This is Swarup Gopa speaking to the Mathura Brahman. With my senses and limbs, I cannot for even a moment leave Krishna's lotus feet, which are anointed with kumkum from the gopis, Braja gopis' breast. In this very poor person, the Lord's mercy has placed faith in his sweetness. Just see, this is why Sanatana Goswami is described and accepted as our Sambandhan Acharya, Sambandhan Tattva Acharya. He is the one who has, let's say, exemplified by his teachings and by his own behaviors the principle of having unalloyed faith in the lotus feet of Krishna. In this very poor person, the Lord's mercy has placed faith in his sweetness. What by others cannot be spoken, I have somehow said. Staying for a long time in Golok, I came to see that it was the same as beautiful material mandal in the material world. Material mandal is also filled with the same gopas, gopis, birds, worms, hills, trees, rivers, and everything else, as it is seen in Golok Dham. It is eternally decorated with the same pastimes of Sriman Krishna Chandra. Sometimes I stay there, and sometimes here in Golok. Sometimes there means Golok, and sometimes here, because he's speaking to the Mathura Brahman here in the Rajabhumi. Yes, okay. Only when coming from one and going to the other may I see a slight difference. Attached to both places, I do not know any difference between them. Neither my eyes, ears, nor mind touch any place other than these two abodes. My heart does not think, quote, Lord Sri Krishna also stays in other places, and his devotees also stay in other places. When sometimes I see the residents of Vaikuntha or other places, I see them as being tormented by separation from Krishna. Sometimes I see in their love snap TK. Koi parishani nahi. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Sometimes I see that their love is not like the love of the people that the people of Braja feel. From that I feel distress, love, and then the highest happiness. He sees Sanatana Goswami, Hare Krishna, it's okay. Let it go. Hari Hari Bo. It's no problem. Hare Krishna. I have two more verses in order to complete. Radhe Radhe. Hare Krishna. So here he's saying, Sarup is saying that sometimes he sees that the love of these people of other places like Vaikuntha, Dwarka, etc., that it is not like the love that the Brajagopis feel or the Brajvasis feel. And he says from that, by seeing that, he feels distress. He feels distress for them. But then he feels the extent of the love which has been, let's say, engendered in him by the grace of the Brajvasis, and then he experiences the highest happiness following in the footsteps of the Brajvasis. I offer my respectful obeisances to the people of Golok, who eternally see the glories of that abode and who are worshipped by the residents of all the worlds. How can I describe them in words? So that is the end of that chapter. Hare Krishna. So there's only 2 minutes left. Unfortunately, we can't speak much longer. And there's so many nice things, but maybe we'll save it for another class. Or maybe I can let Ram Roy, or I can induce him, let's say, not let, as if I'm the allower, the permitter, the overseer, the Lord. But I can try to induce him
to include some of this when he will give his next dissertation on these topics. So, is there any short question? Ki jai. All the Brajvasis ki jai. All the Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.